Oh man. So guys, welcome back to another episode of the Animeversal Reviews podcast. I am Colin Malone, and I am joined by one of the normal co-hosts. The other one is doing better. You guys saw the Chobits thing the other week. We got that finished up. It's Brian. Brian, what's up?
Hey man, how's it going?
I'm doing all right. The others is Christine. The only reason she's not here is she did try to give the show we're talking about today a shot. Still didn't care for it. But Brian and I sure as hell did, and that's Megalobox. Of course, we're sponsored by the good folks over at Grow Generation, where the pros go to grow. And of course, guys, please, if you're watching us on YouTube, Brian is lame and didn't figure out his camera situation ahead of time. So, you know, shame on Brian. But if you're hit that subscribe button and go ahead and hit thumbs down for Brian, and then someone else hit the thumbs up for me. But anyway.
It balances that way.
There you go. If you are listening on the Genreverse Podcast Network, thank you so much. And of course, check out lrmonline.com every day for all your entertainment news, needs, and opinions, guys. Megalobox. What a cool little, you know, shows season one. Brian and I covered it a few weeks ago. You guys can check that out. Link down below. Maybe there'll be a link on the screen. YouTube's weird about that stuff. It was this fun, well executed, simple tournament arc about boxing. And there's a little personal stuff here and there, but overall it was just, it was great because of it did what it did so well. Not that what it did was amazing in itself. Am I wrong describing season one like that, Brian?
Yeah, it season one was very focused on the fight. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, that was it, who's better. And it's, there's the build throughout the whole season, and then, you know, obviously the payoff. It was a simple story in many ways, which is one of the things I liked about it.
Mm-hmm.
And absolutely, we'll get into the season two is not that way.
No. You know, you and I, we looked at season one, and there may have been things that I missed during like a bathroom break, or, you know, looking at a notification on the phone. But, you know, there was definitely, you know, some skin color differences there. There was this mention of citizens, and you and I kind of took it as almost like a post-apocalyptic type deal, because they don't really focus on the politics too much. There's just a couple things dropped. So I was like, you know, is someone here trying to, you know, show a little bit, you know, more Japanese heritage, pride with the darker skin tones and things like that? Season two really shows us exactly what's going on, not necessarily where specifically, but indeed the people with darker skin are immigrants to a different nation, and they do use Latin American culture, really heavy, you know, Mexican influence, southwest of the United States influence in season two, and kind of expand a little bit more that the citizen label is like what we consider citizenship, a legal status within a nation's borders. It's a whole different ball game, Brian. Like you said, this is really just, this is to me a story that has nothing to do with boxing, and just everything that happens in a world where boxing's a big deal. That's it. These are the after effects of fame, of failure, of reaching your goal. You know, the cost of victory is a dude. This series again. Yeah. It stands alone. I'll let I gotta get my thought before it disappears. It stands alone, and it again is this really great story, but it's nothing I haven't seen before, but it does it so well, and it did the one thing you and I really asked, which was, you gotta up your game and do something different, because another tournament arc won't Got it. So, Brian, your initial reactions and thoughts on some of those new things they added in and explained in this.
And one of the main themes that runs through the entire season is dealing with loss. Mm-hmm. You know, like that is a core part. There's multiple storylines that tie into that. And also, I like the idea. There's the idea of, is it too late? Is it not too late? In correcting mistakes you've made. Yes, mm-hmm. Second chances. Exactly.
I got it written.
And that's the show. And yes, like you said, this is a world that boxing is very important. It ties into a lot of people's lives, but that's not the central focus of this season at all. That was in season one, but not in season two.
Yeah, absolutely. Bravo to the team for them doing it. Did you catch much Latin American imagery in season one? Because I really didn't. I like I said, I could have missed something, but
one of the things that I still don't know where this series takes place.
Right. I think it's left ambiguous on purpose.
Because I'm like, okay, it seems like it's Japanese. The characters are Japanese, except like you said, there's these immigrants. But then, like, there's a lot of desert. Is there desert in Japan? Like, I don't know. I honestly don't think there is.
Not like that. They do have an island that's got some sand dunes and stuff, but like that type of desert, no. I actually thought, because, you know, Japan has a huge Euro fetish, right? And I don't mean that in a gross way. I just can't think of a more proper term to use. But a lot of anime gets set in Eurocentric settings. You know, look at Full Metal Alchemist, for example, you know, and it's not the only one. Look at things like, you know, Fate, where they're, you know, borrowing heroes and villains through time and
Attack on Titan.
How many of them are exact? And then Attack on Titan. And so you could almost see where it's like, okay, well, maybe they're looking at the Euro migrant situations, because you have the Iberian Peninsula, which of course, you know, Spain, Portugal connections out here in the new world, if you will. But not only that, but migrations via those countries and leading into places like England and France and Germany. But then you can't ignore the straight US-Mexico parallels, you know, shining cities on the edges of deserts like San Diego or El Paso. And I know people say, oh, are those really shiny? Well, whatever, guy. Big, huge, rich city versus poorer deserts just a few miles away. It was, I don't know where it takes place, but continue your thoughts.
No, it was just, yeah, that's definitely a little more upfront, especially in the first, and I will get into that. I don't want to jump ahead, but this season is broken into sort of arcs, which caught me way off guard, because there's a storyline that's being built at the beginning of the season dealing with a town of immigrants. I thought that was going to be the whole season.
Yeah. So like
it was really building, and I was like, okay, I sort of saw, okay, I see where this is going. I'm wrong. It's like, no, that was only one piece, but it beautifully came back to that in the final little story arc towards the end. So it all came full circle. But yeah, like we were talking about the themes, and I also liked how they teased with, there's a particular character that died. And but we don't really know that for several episodes.
Mm-hmm.
We understand something happened, but we don't quite know what. Matter of fact, all the true revelations they happen throughout the season. You don't really find out all the details until towards the end, as far as what was the loss that Joe went through and what was the dynamic with him and Sachio and the kids and all that. So
yeah.
Very, very well done as far as the way the story played out.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's go ahead and dig down into that story. So it's full spoilers from here on out, everyone. I can't recommend that you do check this show out, regardless of whether you stick for the spoilers.
One left. You really, really, not all shows are like this, but in this case, you have to see season one, in my opinion. And I say that because of the relationships. Like, a lot of the heart punches in this season,
yeah,
for me came from seeing the first season. Now, story wise, they explain everything.
Yeah. So that's what I meant by standalone. But yes, you are absolutely right, especially with Sachio. That'll hit a lot harder if you have season one behind you. But if you're, I know a lot of people that aren't necessarily into who anime, but are definitely hungry for more Latin American style content. And this could, since it is story-wise standalone, this might be a good thing, not just to, you know, say, hey, here's some Japanese people showing some appreciation for Latin American culture, Spanish Hispanic cultures, but also a chance that it might help you or your friends get into anime via this. So yeah. That is true, though, Brian. We'll get into those. So, guys, the story, basically, you know, at the end of season one, we just learned that Joe wins the fight. They show at the end of it was at the 13th round, and it's Joe by knockout, I think it was, and that's it. It's season two. I had no idea what we were going to be getting into, and it's Joe. And I, that text I sent you, because I had seen on the account that you had been watching the show, so I texted, what, oh my god, Joe, you're on drugs, you fucking hit a dog with a bike, and you know what the hell, man. That's how this show opens. You have no idea where the timeline is. They show you some clips of some characters that you don't know, some news flashes, and then all of a sudden, man, you're faced with this guy fighting in gear that you think is likely Joe, maybe Joe's son. Like, what the hell is going on here? But the core of this, and this season, is Joe is a vehicle for, I would say, three other stories, while at the same time getting his own second chance and road to redemption. And the main, like, stories that kind of, you know, are played through with him, of course, are Chief's story and the immigrant village, of course, Sachio and the kids, and then the corporations and Mac. Brian, do you see it any other way?
No, completely. And it's great because the Mac storyline is teased in the very opening of the first episode, I think. Yeah. And but it doesn't come back to way later, and you're like, oh, so like
five, six.
Yeah. And so, yeah, the Mac story is there, but and boy, do they get deep into it towards the end. But yeah, like you said, there's sort of multiple story arcs running.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. So let's just kind of go over them in a general order. The first being, you know, the Chief Joe's back to, you know, fighting on underground matches, shit's not going right, he's on drugs, and eventually, you know, gets saved, so to speak, by this other guy fighting dirty that recognizes Joe, who's fighting as nomad. Joe basically sees a chance to help Chief and the villagers out who are facing eviction by the business people. There's this tournament, some money, and that's what you kind of think this is going to go down. Joe's going to become, this is Creed, right? We just saw Rocky, but Rocky wins in season one, and this is Creed. Joe's going to take on this role, and like you said, we know there's an issue with Team Nowhere and Pops, but we don't know what that issue is. Joe's seeing flashes of him, but his whole first thing is basically, I have a chance to make, you know, at least pay back this guy for helping save my life. What was it like to see this opening for you, dude, and just Joe in this situation? And it took us forever to find out it's been like 5 years.
Yeah, because Joe essentially is he's trying to kill himself, but slowly, very slowly. Like you said, he's now addicted to pills. He has, he's sick every night. He's in all these fights. He's literally just alcohol, drugs, fight. That's his whole life. That's all he's doing. And we know now that he's running. He's essentially running from his past. And the whole Chief storyline, I 100%, like I said earlier, I thought that was going to be the show. It was all going to be Joe helping through tournaments or whatever, helping these people win this land and be able to, you know, secure it. They establish a lot of characters. You sort of have your villain characters. You're dealing with these other kids. There's a lot of different dynamics going on, and you start building all these like storylines in your head. Like, okay, I see what's going to play out.
What you think is going to happen?
But it has a definitive ending. It just sort of wraps up, but it wraps up in a way where Joe is basically told, you have to face what you're running from. You know, you have to get past this. It's either die or go do what you need to do. And, it's all through Chief. Chief is sort of that. Yeah, exactly.
My camera was being so stupid. You saw me.
I saw you.
Yeah, okay. I was apologizing to the audience. Go ahead, Brian.
No, but it the Chief, you know, Chief had loss. He lost his son. He lost everything. And he was fighting, you know, for his people. He was fighting for the memory of his son. Like, there's a lot of elements there. And my God, when Joe got the armor, or what do they call it?
The gear.
Mm-hmm. That was sort of like, okay, he's going to use that at some, like, I called that. I was like, I don't know what's coming, but at some point he's going to wear that as a tribute, as an honor.
Mm-hmm.
And, but yeah, it was very beautifully done.
Absolutely. And you kind of get this like sense that you want to attach some things to Joe, project them, because he looks like these people, but he doesn't act like these people. He doesn't necessarily even know their beliefs and their culture. So you start thinking, well, what's Joe's real background? Does he come from a similar immigrant family that made it?
We never are ever told anything about Joe's background.
Exactly. Yeah. So you start projecting all these things, and you start looking for, you know, okay, well, this is going to be like the story of Joe's background. Is this dad, like, is this guy his dad's cousin or some shit? Like, because that's what anime. And, well, let's face it, that's what pop culture does, is it feeds little nice connections like that. And none of that freaking matters. Joe needs to help Chief. Chief is what matters here. Joe, again, is just a vehicle, but it is a step on his own journey towards redemption. It's simple. Fighting this tournament, win the money, make a bid for the land, save your homes. That's exactly what happens. There's some backstabbing. Some of the kids cause some issues. There's a potential love interest that never pans out, but it's teased. That's
where that was going.
Yeah. Exactly. And then at the end, you're like, okay, Chief wins his big match. You're like, okay, well, this is where Joe goes. You could be Megalomania champion. You could do it. No, Chief fucking dies in his sleep in the cab of his truck. Like, and when you see that he's dead, you're like, oh my God, is this going to be now a murder revenge story? No, Joe's got to move on. Shocking. Brian?
it literally. And then he starts heading back, and then you're like, oh, okay. Well, that's it, it's, I think it's four or five episodes, that sort of story arc. And it literally ends. And then we move on to the next phase of the story for season one. So yeah, I was very surprised by that, but it works.
Yeah. And the next two stories take up the rest of the, you know, seven-ish episodes. Which is the deal with Sachio and the kids, his past with Team Nowhere, which even there, you're like, okay, this is the Creed story where Sachio. No.
For a second, I thought they were going there, and I was getting a little irritated. For a moment.
Yeah, right? Because it's the runt kid, and you're like, I don't want that. But they don't do that. And then there's this other plot that is important to it. These two corporations, Frack, what is their name?
I do not remember.
The show or let me see.
And I love the character, the guy that ran the one.
Yeah, it's Yukiko, her company, and they're working with Roscoe is the other company, Shirato. There you go, Shirato. It's the Shirato and Roscoe corporations and some shady dealings with a chip, you know, technology, kind of similar to what happened in season one with Yukiko's brother, who was a megalo boxer and working with AI and stuff in gear, dealing with this former boxer and cop Mac. And it's just this really, really cool way to see people do the right thing for the right reasons again. Like Yuri's in it and Yukiko is once again showing that, yeah, sure, corporations can be cold and driven by money, but she always had good intentions, you know?
Yeah.
And here again, not only does she do the right thing, but this is all so realistic, dude. She doesn't have some big, huge, elaborate scheme to get the revenge and save face. No, she just leaks the information and then comes clean about their complicity. Like, it is such a cool way to show redemption.
It's like these major companies, and like you said, it's all this stuff going on, but it's so grounded.
Yeah.
Like, it, you know what I mean? It's not overblown, unrealistic. As a matter of fact, it feels very much realistic in how it's portrayed.
Absolutely. You know, I kind of mentioned what, you know, Sachio, when Joe gets back, so some of the kids, the young female, she's kind of like the Ed, if you will, since we made some Cowboy Bebop references last time. She's the mechanically inclined, serving under the shop worker that worked on Joe's bike and stuff in season one. The foodie is, of course, in a noodle shop, and the journalist kid is doing that, and Sachio is trying to be a megalo boxer, trying to fight clean. I'm not going to get into all the nitty gritty one of, you know, individual fights, but through this, Joe basically works up these exhibition fights, one against the person that he lost against after Megalomania when Pops was sick, and this is where we find out what happens to Pops, and then this other fight against Mac. But it's really Sachio who is dealing with his own guilt for feeling like he's the reason why Joe left, Joe's guilt for having left, and it all comes around how people deal with loss and grief. Sachio and Joe dealt with it differently, and it caused issues. Pops dies of cancer, if I'm not mistaken, gets sick over a long time and dies in a hospital bed. And dude, that's kind of like the core of that one, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Go ahead, Brian.
You know, I loved all the dynamics with the different kids, and the fact, and it, the show even addresses this basically, because you do sit back and you're like, Sachio, get over yourself, man. It's like, and the kids they're legitimately angry at Joe. A few of them even are like, you know what, there's parts of this I can't forgive, but they moved on with their lives. Mm-hmm. They're like, look, I got shit to do. Mm-hmm. And then in the end, yes, they're like, okay, Joe, look, we are a family. We have issues, but we can work through it. Sachio just whines and cries the whole damn time until a scene that is magical that I absolutely loved. I what? Actually want to say when Joe beats the shit out of him.
Oh, yeah. That was great. That was awesome.
I got worried that Satya was going to be in any way
the prodigy
decent. Something. Yeah. Yeah, because they've been building up the whole thing that he's not good. He gets his ass flipped all the time. And I'm sitting here like, okay, Joe's one of the greatest of all time. Satya shouldn't be able to even land a hit. And I didn't know where they were going with it. And then we get into the fight, and that's exactly what happened. Joe beat the hell out of Satya. And basically, like, look, you're not a fighter, man. That's just not who you are. But like you had said it earlier, Satya and Joe, there's just a lot of miscommunication because both of them are blaming themselves for the same thing, really, you know?
Yeah.
And what they don't both realize is that at the end of the day, everything that happened in terms of the death and just how everything, Joe going to do that fight and everything, that was all good for him. He sort of needed that. And Satya and the kids needed to be at the hospital. In other words, everybody was where they needed to be, and they never realized that was, they needed to be there. Joe couldn't have been in that hospital room at that time. I don't think he was not built for that. Yeah, he's built to take a beating, but when it comes to that emotional connection, he's different.
Yeah.
And so these are things that they all discover and learn, you know, through the course of the episode. And you get the nice little family dynamic by the end, but it's a lot of struggle and a lot of, it's just emotional shit. And it's just family dynamics. And that's what's so great about this season was it wasn't about the fighting.
Mm-mm. Nope. It's all those little things. And then the last part of this story element before we take the break is, of course, the corporations and Mac, and that kind of gets connected to Joe via Yuri and the guy that beat Joe the night Pops dies in the hospital. But basically, it's an exhibition match. It's not for anything. It's Yuri's prodigy, his star pupil, there's this other boxer who got injured as a cop after he got out of boxing because he was just, you know, not that great, had an anger management issue. But he gets this, you know, medical chip electric chip put in him, and it's supposed to help him walk and all that, heal his injured brain. He's seen as a hero. The Shirato group gets involved because just like Yukiko wanted in the last one with the gear research, it was like for, you know, medical purposes, not the military. Well, this BES system is going specifically for the military.
Yeah.
As far as Roscoe is concerned, and they've fudged some data and things like that, and there's this really, you know, tragic story with Mac, this guy that he's, you know, he was a boxer, had his own little mini redemption via becoming a police officer, you know, has a hero's tragic ending to his career. And then a hero's, you know, rise from the ashes, and he's caught in the middle of this corporate bullshit, gets this awful, you know, episode and a half arc with alcoholism, and you're like, oh my god, what is he gonna do? Is he gonna go with the plan, or is his brain gonna pop? Because of course there's side effects. And in the end, they again used Joe via, like I said, Yuri and the other fighter. I hate that I can't remember his name right now. Yuri's,
yes, his protege,
student, Edison. Yeah, Edison Liu. That's it, Edison Liu. They get connected to Joe and Satya, and basically, Mac gets this person that's been working with the program to make sure his brain doesn't pop, that he doesn't go into Mac time, this condition with the chip. And Satya and Joe agree that this is an exhibition match. We're doing it because we're obligated. If you start throwing punches, Satya says, I'm throwing in the towel. And Joe's like, okay, do it. Make sure you do. Because they're afraid that these two guys will get into the heat of the moment, which is what causes an issue earlier. And that's the end of it. They literally make the right choice. Sachio almost does it until he has his own moment with Pop's ghost and throws in the towel. Exhibition fight over, legitimately happily ever after for the classes that these people are in. I thought this was great. Sachio rides off into the sunset on Joe's steed, if you will, and Joe upgrades to a truck, and it was a cool little ending, man. What'd you?
It was the final fight was so. I'm gonna use a negative thing, but it's not negative. It's anticlimactic,
mm-hmm.
but for the right reasons.
Yeah,
and the show. It's almost like they set out to say, we want to make a show where there's the big fight at the end, but we want to make it where it is anticlimactic, like it's supposed to be. Because like you said, he throws in the towel. It's not about the winner. It's not about, and matter of fact, the show even glosses over it. It's just like, oh, okay, cool. Joe's like, yeah, you did the right thing.
Yep.
Because at that point, these are two fighters. They don't necessarily need to prove who's the best.
Mm-mm.
It's about them surviving and being there for their families, both Mac and his family and Joe and yep. his adoptive family. And it's not worth it, you know, killing yourself in the ring, essentially. And so by the end of it, and, you know, it's sort of corny, but it's like, no, it was about surviving for your family. And yeah, perfect.
I dug it 100%. I don't foresee there being a reason for season three, but I mean,
we said that
I didn't think there would be a reason for season two. I legitimately, the way that they could even bounce back now to some sort of tournament arc, and I'd be okay with it. Depending on how they did it, you know, but they could, or they could look for another personal story, diving deeper into the corporations side of things, diving deeper into the immigrants side of things.
Joe does have a school now,
mm-hmm.
and the young guy from the town at the beginning,
mm-hmm.
you could arguably say, what if he got into boxing? You know what I mean? He's young enough to where he could have a trajectory of maybe he's great. I could see a third season if you wanted to go into that storyline, bringing him over, Joe training him or something like that. So I do think it's possible, but I haven't. Yeah, it's not necessary, not at all.
Yeah. excuse me. With that, guys, I think that kind of covers the story and a lot of the themes. We'll touch up on some of the themes in the characters on the other side, as well as the animation and the music. I know, Brian, you definitely wanted to talk about that. So let's hear from Grow Generation, guys. Take it away.
Grow Generation, where the pros go to grow. The Grow Generation commercial team is armed with industry-leading professional consultants. Grow Generation's team will help you fully manage any size or scale project. They offer turnkey facility designs, cultivation room design, and on-site project consultation. Go to www.growgeneration.com, where the pros go to grow.
All right, thank you guys so much for sponsoring the show, the episode, whatever you want to call it. Grow Generation, where the pros go to grow. Brian, with the characters, you know, we've kind of talked about all of them, but I do want to touch a little bit more on Chief, of course, and definitely Sachio, and a little bit on Yuri even, and whatever else you want to. Chief being that first, you know, the big catalyst for Joe in this season. He, you'd never get like a serious, a lot of ambiguity in these guys' background. So you're always like, well, they're an adult, but how old are they? And just cause someone's wise doesn't mean that they're old. And I don't know. The character's a very cool character. He's very, very similar to Joe, where he's willing to do dirty work, but not necessarily like Joe, where Joe was willing to do dirty work to get by. Chief is more like, I'll do what needs to be done, but you bet your ass it's only for the right reasons. And if I can do it, in a better way, I will, which he ends up doing. As it kind of fell apart that we weren't going to follow him anymore, like, what's your take on Chief, man, himself, and were you sad to see him go, or were you really, really impressed with that story choice?
It was sad that he went, but it was, by the end, right, necessary for the story. And Joe and Chief are very similar in many ways. Even Mac, all mm-hmm. those three characters have a lot of similarities. And we also know one of the reasons Chief was aware or able to pin down, okay, Joe, this is what he's going through, the drugs, the booze, because Chief had been in a similar situation. Yep. So these are guys that have similar backgrounds in terms of tragedy. Both had dealt with death. That it affected them, you know, strongly, and they both went down the path of drugs and booze. Yeah. And so, you know, that was something they had that bonded them also. And then he had this tea that remedied it. Some of the Joe's, I sidetrack real quick. Like, I think it was in season one, Joe, you know, he's just constantly pissing blood. And there are certain things Joe goes through as a fighter. And I'm like, man, screw that.
I know, like, right?
That's just part of his life day to day. But getting back to Chief, when he died, it's one of those shocking moments. You're just like, what? Like, it just came out of nowhere. And I just didn't see where it was going to go after that in terms of his death until Joe got the gear.
Yeah.
Then I said, okay, that's significant. And it was, and even the symbol was a hummingbird.
Yep.
Which ties into Mac and the story and his child. Yep. So there's a lot of connections to all that. But, and it even ties into when they have to re-engineer the gear.
Mm-hmm.
That was really cool for Joe's frame. But Chief was a strong character for the show. And yeah. By the final episode, he was as significant as anybody else.
Oh, yeah.
So he was only in 3 or 4 episodes.
Yep. 100%. The other character I really wanted to touch up on again, and especially that fight, Sachio, you know, he does get the jump on Joe early and, you know, lays the smackdown on Joe simply from Joe's condition and the surprise attack. But his whole arc is legitimately realistic. Again, young kids dealing with loss. He was already an orphan, and here he just lost his adopted dad, if you will. And it's a really cool vehicle to see, because while, like you said, everyone's like, dude, stop your fucking bitching and moaning. But that really happens. We've all had that cousin that, you know, couldn't get over their parents' death, or a sibling that couldn't get over grandparents' death, or something where you're like, okay, guy, girl, it's time, you know. But people do struggle, and I liked that we got to see that, and I was really impressed that Joe lays the smack down on him in the ring. Like you said, I don't think Sachio laid a single hit. Joe not only leaves it alone, but he offers, or you know, Joe not only beats his ass, but he offers Sachio, he's like, okay, that's it, we're done, right? I beat you. Sachio's like, no, and Joe's like, okay, and puts him down again, just like that's it, kid, this is not your lane. And that's one of the themes there. Taking responsibility is also accepting what you can and can't do. I liked Sachio a lot this season.
It was also the path, you know, destiny, whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
Sachio had gone the route of fighter. That's not who Sachio is.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone around him knew it. And Sachio deep down knew it as well. And that was sort of one of those moments. It was more of a rebellious thing. And yeah. Also his way of running, similar to what Joe did. And that moment where Joe beat him down was basically... look, this isn't you. And Sachio accepted it. And, mm-hmm. and at that point, so
I had no real choice.
I mean, that's very true.
What else are you gonna do? You know, I don't want to glance over at everyone, but you can't ignore the former champ Yuri, who gets, you know, kind of two people to train up and helps Joe find his path, not just necessarily Joe's path, but Joe's reason to take the path. You know, I think that's often something that we miss out on sometimes, is we're always like, oh, someone showed someone the way. Sometimes you already knew the way, you're just not walking it. Someone finally gives you a reason to walk it. And I think that was kind of Yuri's job this time around. You know, even says, you know, my student Edison Liu, he asked me to come to your corner. It's the only reason I'm here. And you can even see where Yuri's got an issue with the path that Joe took and stuff like that. I like the flashback scene with the bridge where they're talking about the first time that they met and had a serious, you know, talk. I like the use of Yuri. Good use of white-haired antagonist guy turned protagonist. What do you have to say about him, Brian?
Yeah, and Yuri's also seems a little conflicted in that his fighter is now, you know, just been destroyed.
Yeah, he got fucked up by Mac time.
I mean, just obliterated. And by the ending, when Joe's going to take the fight, you know, Yuri's like, no, man, I don't know if this is right. Yuri's hit the point where he realizes, look, he loves fighting. Fighting is great. But is it worth destroying your body over? Is it worth being in the wheelchair? Now he's and I think he even said he's comfortable with where he is. He made his decisions.
His body,
he's accepted.
Completely fell apart after the fight from the removal of his high tech gear and the fight with Joe and
But is it necessarily the right thing for, you know, these other guys? And he, I think he's sort of conflicted in that. Because at that, especially by the end, at that point, everybody knows, look, Joe, you're not going to be able to take too many more hits. Mm-hmm. You know, it was, there were similar, it's funny, there were some plot lines that remind, it was like going into Rocky V territory, which, you know, everybody hates Rocky V, but the idea that, you know, coming off of Rocky IV, that fight, yes, you won, you're great, but it destroyed you. You know, Rocky was absolutely obliterated, brain damage, everything else. And that was sort of Joe's situation at that point. I mean, they were talking about, you know, from the drugs and all that stuff. He had scarring and damage all in his organs. And, you know,
his liver processing, I think, was mentioned, or kidneys or something like that mentioned. And but they were like, you know, if he just stops and heals up, he'll be okay. There's no, like, underlying, like, clock that's ticking unless he keeps this up. It'll start ticking, you know,
unless he lets Mac time.
Yeah. Unless he lets Mac time. So I really like that. And that got to connect along with that whole situation of throwing in the towel. I can't express how much I love that it ended like that. It reminds me of those really, really awesome anticlimactic endings that, while you don't necessarily get that huge emotional release from like a moment like the portal scene in Endgame, you get a completely different type of satisfaction. Is it as exhilarating? No, but it's one of those rare treats. It's like a food that tastes really good and it's awesome to have every now and then, but it's not necessarily like the greatest thing ever. It's just that one time, that one moment type treat. Does that make sense?
Yeah, because instinctively you think you don't want that. And then when he threw the towel in, the way that whole thing played out, I smiled. I was like, yeah, that was right. That was how this was supposed to end.
And
you don't, I didn't, it was one of those things where if you had told me before the episode aired, I'd be like, oh, it's bullshit. You know, but watching it play out, I was like, no, that's exactly how it needed to end.
Mm-hmm. I like that. And the other thing that I love here is outside of that, the fights dealing with Mac, there's never really in anything outside of personal shit on the line in any other fight. Every fight's an exhibition. There's no like money. Everything's just, you know, promoting the corporations and the tech, trying to get your second chance, trying to redeem yourself and prove something. It's all personal stuff, man. I like it, and that's kind of the themes here. Was there any real characters that we kind of missed that you wanted to talk about in any detail?
Not really. There was, like I said, there were so many little characters that had little moments. Even the guy that was training the young girl, you know, he had
in the shop.
Yeah, in the shop, he was like, you know, he didn't have kids or whatever, and he was like, you know, I thought when I died, my craft and everything went with me, but wow, you get to carry this on. And it was an interesting moment, because I think it also, that moment ties into sort of the Joe story, in that the idea of adoptive family. And that's still family, and that's still something that's important, and it's, you know, not just always blood. It's and that's another thing that sort of plays through a lot of Joe's storyline.
Family and legacy. I would say legacy, because people throw away terms like legend and hero and all these things about memories and stuff like that. And let's face it, as far as we know, we're the only species that recognizes our mortality. Like, we're going to die. Spoiler alert. And dealing with that is, it's interesting. This is how we deal with it. Through media, man, through all these stories that we get to see in anime and in movies, television, books. I mean, from the time we sat around, you know, campfires 10,000 years ago, telling ghost stories so people wouldn't, you know, get eaten by a saber-toothed tiger or whatever the fuck. All of that feeds into these, and again, it's something so simple, but taking responsibility, dealing with failure and loss, second chances, and again, something that I always make jokes about how much I hate my conscience and doing the right thing, but God, man, it's kind of nice to see realistic takes in media. Even when they're dealing with unrealistic situations, the fact the Shirato group did what they did, Yukiko sticking with what she did, her brother getting redemption real quick, just
small little thing,
so important, because it's his research into the chip and stuff that lets the cat out of the bag and allows Yukiko to communicate with a student, a former student of her brother's, that is now at the Roscoe Corporation. It's all freaking connected. It sounds like it's this huge, brilliant thing, but it's not. It's just really realistic.
It's amazing how many of those little storylines from season one continue. It did carry over and had gone in different directions. It is weird.
Which is really impressive, because none of these things really had much weight in season one at all.
No,
at all. You know, we've mentioned a few times the Hispanic Latin American imagery, Tex-Mex ish, even if you will. I really really dug it. Just being a fan of the Desert Southwest and those aesthetics. It's awesome, not to mention the food. I love my adoptive home state of Arizona. And again, it's rare to see this imagery in this format. Anything you want to bring up on any of that? You and I grew up with huge amounts of Latin American friends and associates due to our military parents. We had a very diverse upbringing in schools because of that. So anyways, go ahead.
Yeah, just yet, like you said earlier, it's just cool to see. I went into the season not knowing what it was going to be, and seeing that level of representation and the way it was handled, and yeah, it was cool. And we talked about the animation in season one. Animation was just as on point in season two, and like you said, a lot of those shots of the desert and just the way things were presented was really cool also.
Yeah, absolutely. And then of course the music, you know, you can't mention the
music.
Hispanic and Latin American influence without, you know, thinking of the OP and the ending, of course, and that one song that gets played multiple times throughout, as well as other pieces. But there's traditional Megalobox music in here too, with a hip-hop / pop flair to it. I like the determination music, as I call it, the build up music whenever they're about to make their big, you know, choices of the next fight or the next move. I thought it was all wonderfully executed. I really do love the lyrical songs that are played in a very traditional Mexican Southwest style. Brian, you had a lot, or wanted to say some stuff, so go ahead.
The opening credit sequence and the piece of music, it's phenomenal. Like top of the line for me in terms of anime. I absolutely loved it. Like you said, there's a beautiful piece of music that plays through several episodes, sort of a theme that ties into things that are going on and certain points that Joe is, I think Mac, like everyone, there's a certain piece that sort of runs throughout the story. The ending credits, it is rare that I sit through ending credits just for the hell of it. Like, I just don't. But I found myself doing that several times. You would hit a point at the end of the episode and then the piece would come in and you would just sort of, I just sit
there.
It's okay,
I can play it.
The music, for me, that was one of my biggest gripes with season one. It just didn't, there wasn't anything about it that stuck out.
They
to me
wanted it to be, but it didn't make it.
It just didn't work. I mean, it wasn't bad. Yeah, it was just there.
Par for course.
It was it very standard. Nomad, the music to me went above, way above what season one did.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, they didn't fix anything that wasn't broken, which means, honestly, I don't really think there's necessarily any negatives to say about this, other than I've seen it all before. These are tropes, you know, these are stereotypes, but they're not executed stereotypically. They're not executed in the stereotypical genres that you usually see these things, and they managed to completely surprise me and give me something that both feels like Megalobox but isn't Megalobox. And I'll go ahead and just give my grade with that. I'll let you say your final thoughts and your grade, and I give it an A, man. Just a solid A from me.
Yeah, A minus for me. Solid. It's you had said earlier that it was, like, you know, good slice of life anime. That there's a boxing thing there, you know, and that is what it is. I couldn't believe how good it was. Because I assumed it, I was like, you know, I love season one was solid. I was like, okay, it was fun. I didn't think that I really didn't think season two was going to be better than season one. I just didn't. But it was for me.
Absolutely. We touched on the idea of a season three. I don't necessarily want one, like I said, but they do have the possibilities there. And because season two was so good, if they ever announce a season three or a spinoff or whatever they want to call it, I'm 100% already checking it out. It's already on the watch list before it's even announced. What do you think about season three? Did this impress you enough to? It's an automatic watch.
It's an automatic watch. I typically, anything we review, I don't look up anything on it until after we get done. Mm-hmm. So I am going to go check after we record this and see, is there a third season in production or, you know, anything like that?
There wasn't anything on the wiki, but that doesn't mean that nothing. And I didn't dig too deep because I'm a lot like you on that.
Yeah. So, I would be completely okay with a season three. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, with that, guys, we'll start wrapping things up, and I'll say it. We are doing Star Wars Visions next week. It'll be a combination Cantina Reviews podcast from the Cantina, our Star Wars show at the Genreverse Podcast Network, wherever you get your podcast from. But Brian, Christine, and myself will all be there from the AVR crew. And then I am on the Cantina with Shockey, who will be joining us, and we'll also have Jammer, Joseph Jammer Medina, former editor-in-chief here at LRM, and he's been on AVR, did Summer Wars with us, and so it's gonna be a lot of fun. Cam Clark, who's not really an anime fan, is gonna do a Cam's Corner, if you will, kind of give us a couple of minutes. So that'll be in the video, and all of us will get a chance to hear his thoughts. So check that out next weekend. Look for it Sunday the 26th, well, whatever that Sunday is. Check out, like I said, the podcast network, Genreverse Podcast Network, wherever you get your podcast from. Breaking Geek Radio, the podcast, kind of like our long form week cap podcast from Nick and Jammer and Jonesy, the Cantina, the Anime Versal Reviews, the Midnight Run with the puppets. Christine and I did the Chobits a couple weeks ago, and of course the Daily Cup of Genre every Monday through Friday. That's a video series as well. Most of these are in video over on the YouTube channel, LRM's YouTube channel. So hit subscribe, follow, share, all that good stuff, and check out the website. Brian does a lot of really cool things on the interwebs as well. On one format, but it is a lot of cool things. Brian, talk about it.
Yeah, you can find me on YouTube. The channel is Pulp Mythos, and reviewing shows like American Horror Story, Only Murders in the Building, and Big Sky returning later this month.
Very cool, guys. Check them out. Hit all those buttons like we said, and we'll see you guys for Star Wars Visions. Bye.